just to be creative. And I think there's a lot of ways that you can grow things that don't necessarily require you having a standard 4x8 foot bed, raised bed garden and all the works. Like, you know, you really just need a container. It doesn't even have to be a pot.
Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna, a show where I will share all the amazing and exciting works of sustainability happening across the eastern foothills of the Appalachian Mountains to the lush farmlands of southeastern Pennsylvania. By celebrating our community, we can help to bridge the gap between local and international sustainability endeavors. Today's guest is Tiana Lopez. Tiana is a local writer, botanist, and urban gardener. We recently sat down to talk about what is urban gardening and how you can grow your own garden at home. We also talked about how it is vitally important for urban gardens to exist in cities like Reading, Pennsylvania, and how programs like the Victory Garden Task Force are breathing new life into gardening in the city. If you would like to learn more about urban and Victory Gardening and its many benefits, check out the weekly Ingest newsletter published on June 29th. The newsletter can be found under the resource blog tab over on the Sustaining with Shayna website. Before we meet Tiana, hear a word about our sponsor. Happy Plastic Free July, everyone. We're excited to have FD Market sponsoring us through the month of July. FD Market is a small, sustainable, everyday goods shop located in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. Their goal is to provide affordable and practical sustainability products and resources to their community. Better yet, their products are ethically and as locally sourced as possible. Products like alternatives to plastic wrap and storage containers, to shampoo bars and toothpaste tablets. Earlier this year, I was excited to learn about FD Market, a zero-waste home goods store that was finally coming to our community. It gives me hope that people now have the opportunity to go sustainable and support a local business at the same time. I'm most excited about trying to reduce my plastic waste consumption in the bathroom, with all the products we use are stored in bottles made with terrible petrochemicals. To start, I've tried the shampoo bars that FD Market sells. Their shampoo bars left my hair feeling silky, smooth, and fresh. Do you want to give FD Market a try and begin living a zero-waste lifestyle? Well, you're in luck. As part of a special promotion, you can get 15% off your next purchase with using the promo code SustainingWithShayna. And that is spelled SustainingWithShayna. SHANA. All one word, no underscores or spaces. This promo code can be used on their online store as well as in person. If you don't live in Eastern Pennsylvania, don't worry. FD Market can ship your order right to your front door. Also, this coming Wednesday, July 22nd at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we are going live with FD Market on Instagram to talk about how individuals can begin to lead their own sustainable lives. Hope you can join us. Welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. This episode I'm particularly really, really excited about, having an urban gardener to an all-around environmentally minded professional. So without further ado, Tiana, please introduce yourself.
Well, hello. So my name is Tiana, also known as Creative Tiana to some people in the community. And yeah, that's just who I am.
So could you talk more about what Creative Tiana is as a platform and also what you do over at Potted Poetry?
So for my platform, I guess Creative Tiana is just my regular name, I guess you would say, kind of what I go by. That was my name for like almost 10 years now. And Potted Poetry came about a little more recently, about 3 years ago. And I just decided to focus like more of my urban gardening in general type of efforts under the name Potted Poetry. So That's the more professional name per se.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. So when you talk about urban gardening, what is it? And for those that either don't know how to garden or maybe don't know how to garden in a urban setting, do you have any advice for that?
Sure. So urban gardening to me is like, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's gardening in an urban setting. And, you know, that doesn't mean like quite literally in the city. It can be just in a place that you just have, well, in my opinion, it could be a place that you have like a really small space. And that could be anywhere. It could be a balcony. It could be if you have like a little front porch or maybe a fire escape, a windowsill, anywhere that's like a small space. Primarily like, you know, cities, I think the reason that that term came about is because people were getting squished into these small cities, but they still have this desire to garden or grow something. And, you know, humans are creative, so they innovated and came up with all these ways that they could still do that. As far as tips, I guess I would say just to be creative. And I think there's a lot of ways that you can grow things that don't necessarily require you having a standard 4x8 foot bed, raised bed garden and all the works. Like, you know, you really just need a container. It doesn't even have to be a pot. It could be a mug or like something like a jar, anything you have, even preferable because now you're reusing something, and just some soil or water and time and effort. So I think that's the essence of urban gardening is the ability to be creative in a small space.
Yeah, when you described that, it almost made me think of the city of Reading's greenhouse that unfortunately we used to have, not currently have, and seeing all the different containers that people would grow things in. I remember going to an Earth Day event maybe like 1 or 2 years ago, and there was a gentleman that was showing how to get that, I guess with a 40-gallon bucket, of how you could grow, whether it was vegetables to something like corn, just with water and certain other things. So there's so many different ways to grow in all these different containers for sure. So how would you describe your relationship with the land and kind of like how that's propelled you to urban garden?
I think for the moment, and especially for like the times we're in right now with, you know, a global pandemic, I would definitely say that it's been one just long learning experience. Like, that's what I would think my relationship with the land is. Particularly this summer, I had the space and I had the scale to have a big urban garden, like an actual formal garden. And then yet I found myself battling the animals and the elements and the soil conditions and potential soil contamination. And so I feel like even at this stage, you know, after years of doing this professionally, I'm still learning. So I would definitely say just one big, long learning experience, and especially just learning about balance and the animals and the different ways that we still interact with the land that we don't usually think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can be different for everyone, because it's, at least for me, I grew up living in a suburban type setting. So we had a big enough like space for a sizable garden, but also we lived in very fenced in communities. So it's not like we have squirrels coming through or deer coming through almost on a daily basis. But we have some issues here and there, but I can understand that. So when you talk about your experiences of being an urban gardener, was this relationship and knowledge instilled in you at a young age by others, or did you kind of teach yourself how to garden?
It was a combination of both, really. Both sets of my grandparents, they were all gardeners. My great grandparents, they had land and they had like a mini orchard, a pond. They lived in like the Pennsylvania Dutch kind of areas, like more in Lancaster. Well, my whole family, they originate in Lancaster. So in like that kind of Amish farm, Mennonite, more rural areas. So they already had that foundation and they were always into gardening. And my great grandma had a garden as well. But it wasn't something like that I still actively grew up doing all the time. Like, we weren't out there every day gardening. It was kind of like a Sunday at grandma's type of thing. Mm-hmm. So then it was more of like, although it was there for me, later I came back to it and sort of brought myself to it more. And then I had to relearn things. I remember like when my great-great aunt, but I also call her my Grammy, because at that age, you know, everybody's mm-hmm. Grammy. Mm-hmm. She had lots of land and she had the mini orchard and she had books on birds and gardening. And I remember taking books from her house when I was in college. And those were like the two books that I took with me to college, was about birds and gardening, I remember. And I was reading those books. And then at that time, you know, the internet is a big, wonderful place. You know, we have YouTube, which is a gold mine for gardening information. So then I just started teaching myself from YouTube, from Google, and then buying books at Barnes and Nobles or Lowe's or just wherever. So it was definitely a mix of both.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is probably the most, I guess, like life-changing thing that you've learned since kind of teaching yourself gardening, or something that you never thought you could like do, I guess?
I think just growing food in general. Like, I never saw myself, even when I was gardening in the beginning, I never saw myself as a person who was growing food. Like, I was always with flowers and houseplants and just more ornamental type things. But then like growing carrots and like pulling up root veggies, or knowing like this at what time to sow this and how long till maturity, like just in general, growing food is something that I don't think I ever saw myself becoming invested in or becoming good at. And I never thought it would be as easy, not saying that it's like a piece of cake, because it definitely has its drawbacks sometimes, depending, you know, upon layers and layers of things that are going on, you know, your location, your level of pests and all that. So that's something I definitely would say. And it's, you know, extremely rewarding to grow your own food. Like, you know, the other day, something that was accidental, like a bunch of carrots, like I was germinating these carrots in these containers and the squirrels knocked them all over around the yard. And so I thought they were lost, but then they came up anyway. And then I pulled them up and that was really cool. And like, we ate them, like we tasted them and they were the sweetest, crisp, most delicious carrots, even though they were tiny. And that was something that still, like, it still amazes me just to taste things that happened on accident or that I was trying to do and like it actually came to fruition. So I think that's been really great.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I resonate with carrots because carrots, I feel like in our climate, are really hard to grow because you have to have like the soil somewhat dry. It can't be super moist, and you have to have like siltier soil. It can't be more thick and kind of compact. And I had a kind of a similar situation where I sowed the seeds probably back early May. And it took about like 3 or 4 weeks to get just the little leaves to start to sprout. And I thought, those carrots won't come up because I got them from a friend and they were supposed to be for a season that was maybe 2-3 years ago they were dated for. Mm-hmm. So I was like, they won't come up. And then sure enough, one day I was out in the garden taking care of the red beets that we were growing like right next to the carrots. And I see the little tiny leaves start to pop up. And just the other day I harvested this gorgeous purple and orange carrot. So you nice. Cut it and it's like a bright yellowy orange color.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. And yeah. I love like when a plant works out. Like, you know, you sometimes even like back where I used to live, I think one time I threw some squash seeds from like a legit, like a squash that we actually ate from the store and a squash grew out there. And I just thought that was fascinating. Like sometimes you don't even have to be involved in it and nature will decide like, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to create a whole nother plant. I really don't even need your help if I really don't want to. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm kind of curious for your take on this that, so right before this episode had on Lucine Sahelnick with Redding mm-hmm. City Council, and we talked about the cultivating community, City of Redding, Victory Garden Task Force, and I asked her the same question, or to some degree, is, so right now, city officials and members of the community are working on a climate action plan. And what is your hope that possibly if the writers of the city's climate action plan were to listen to this episode of how we could incorporate urban gardening or urban farming into our community more on a a systematic level, almost like mm-hmm. even programs. What would be your take on that?
So I actually listened to that episode. And first of all, that was a great episode. I really liked it. I was like, this is spot on. And I just like everything like the Berks Victory Garden Initiative is doing, everything that's involved with that. That's pretty awesome. And, you know, I just think that right now there are people that have resources to do a lot of things that a lot of us in this space would like to do, and they're using them to do that. So I think that's really great. So my hope, I guess, would be that I always just think from an education standpoint, because I think a big reason, like one of the things I like and I don't like is, you know, for me personally, to be in the gardening niche or, you know, the nature loving niche and to be Black or Latina, whatever. I'm Black and Puerto Rican, so I kind of inhabit both worlds. To be in that is sort of a anomaly or like it's something special or, and I would prefer that not be the case. I would prefer that would be completely normal, completely, oh, okay, you know, there's nothing special about that. So for me, I always think from the standpoint of education, like, I think a lot of what we're doing is great, but I would really love to see lots more beginner education being put out there because so many people come up to me like, oh, you garden, that's so cool. I can never grow something. Oh, I don't think I could ever take care of a plant or I could never do this. And I'm like, you'd actually be surprised. You can. believe me, you can. I 100% believe everybody can garden. And I think that that would be where I would like to start, just in general, just more beginner education, and making people aware. And I think right now we're kind of doing that. Like, you know, they distributed the Victory Garden kits and things. But, you know, a lot of times when we do things like that, we're starting with people who are already interested in that, you know, who already know a little bit of what they're doing. They're already kind of seeking those opportunities out. And I just wish we could find ways to find people who would never think of that themselves and present them like, did you know that you even have the option to grow some herbs in your windowsill or in a little space that you have, you know? And I think that would be a good starting point.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting you say that, because that's one of the things that I discussed with Lucine, is how can we incorporate people of all different levels across the city, not just parts of the city or people that are already involved in gardening, or also especially people who come from the more affluent parts of the city. Like, this has to include everyone. And I mentioned the fact that I know Berks Nature has organized, I don't know how many, but I think it's at least a dozen of community gardens across the city. But, I mean, they're a nonprofit. They can only do so much. And I could only imagine what could happen if the city were to take this whole new Victory Garden task force to whole new limits, where they can partner with this organization and just even having educational programs. Now, obviously, it can't happen right now because of COVID, but I don't know. I think it could be another way to breathe new life into the community.
Yeah, and my critique, and I feel perfectly comfortable saying this because I've already said it to their faces, to Berks Nature, I have reached out myself multiple times about those community gardens through email and through voice messages and in person when I applied for a position there a long time ago. And you have yet to receive any type of response about them. You know, there's a community garden that is listed on the Berks Nature garden website, literally two blocks over from me. And it is degenerate, it is decaying, it is wasted space, it's huge space, and it's just there. And 2 years ago, I reached out to them about it. And then last year, I reached out to them about it. And, you know, my critique on them is, what's going on with that? You know, and I visited the other community garden, which it seemed like some people were working there. There were some plots that were taken and stuff. But I don't know if that was like an active thing or if nature was just being nature and taking over.
Yeah.
So from what I've seen, like, those gardens are there as show, as like, oh yeah, we have community gardens, but we actually don't care because we're not really truly investing in them or letting the people in those communities invest in them, you know? And the funny thing is, like, the people that I have talked to about those community gardens who know about them and who are aware of them don't even live in Reading. They live on the outskirts of Reading, or they used to live in Reading, or, you know, that's the case. So that troubles me that everyone who does know about these, they don't even live here, and they don't come back here, and nor are they going to invest here. But, you know, the people that are here that are around the corner, you know, the one in particular that is near me is called Uni's Garden, and there's a playground right there, there's a supermarket right there, there's lots and lots of opportunity there, and it's just being ignored and wasted. And, you know, I would love for Berks Nature to give me an answer on to why. Calling you out, Berks Nature. Well, I'd love to know why. And it's funny because, you know, as I say, I have the receipts, I have the emails that I sent, I have the phone calls, and, you know, maybe they're busy with other initiatives, but, you know, if you have all these on their site listed, that must mean somebody has to care about them, or someone has to know something about them. And to me, if there's not going to be enough care there, turn it over to people who will care. Mm-hmm. So that's my big critique on that, because I feel like I'm probably not the only person that has ever thought of that or dealt with that in that respect.
Yeah, no, I hear your concern and understand your concern. And I think, at least from personal experience and having worked there, I think the one person that oversees it now, I don't remember who it is, to be honest, like everybody else, I think has 10 different things. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I find that really curious, because I used to do the sustainable agriculture instructions at their summer camps. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I actually ever pitched this to them, but, and I hope they're listening, because it could be an idea, is I could have pitched this idea. Maybe I didn't, but so I did the sustainable agriculture instruction, but couldn't there be like just somebody that coordinates all the city's gardens, mm-hmm. runs the garden on site, which is probably the prettiest out of all of them that they own, but then also work with the instructor of the summer camp that does stuff mm-hmm. with the garden? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like there is so much work, even 365 days a year, that could just have like a community garden coordinator, which, fun fact, I saw a job sort of related to that on Indeed the other day for the city of Philadelphia. So mm-hmm. it's possible.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to, like, again, what do we value? Do we value that, you know? From my perspective, a community garden isn't just a place where people come and grow food and then they go home. That's not what happens there, you know? People learn self-sufficiency there. People can relax there. People can escape there. They can meet other people in their communities there. First, especially during these times, this is the time that it would have been completely and absolutely needed for abundant and rich community gardens. People definitely needed that right now. Mm-hmm. And I think they serve so many other purposes than, oh, people can just pay $5 and get a little plot and grow some tomatoes here. That's not what happens there. So there's layers and layers and layers upon life that a community garden gives back.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, it's not even a thing of funding, because I think a lot of times some people will be like, oh, well, we don't have money for that, or there's not enough. People will find money. And people will give money. There are lots of people who will give their money for that cause. And I think sometimes it's easier to come across funding than others may think, because that's just their own, you know, limitations in their minds. But it's definitely something that I think is needed. And I think that Reading is neat that it has so many of those little pockets and spaces, and probably potential for even more spaces tucked away for community gardens. And I think that they would find that a lot of people here, especially from so many different cultural backgrounds, especially from, you know, Latin America, where a lot of people are coming from backgrounds where they already learned those cultural skills of gardening second nature. Mm-hmm. I think they would find that a lot of people would really be interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just even as you're saying that, the different varieties of things that can grow with people infusing their cultural mm-hmm. upbringings and backgrounds and influences with it. But I kind of wanted to go back to another point that you just said there, where looking for funding, and I kind of get really frustrated when I hear people say that, because it's a very like consumeristic way of looking at gardening. Mm-hmm. When you put it simply, it's just soil and seeds.
Yes.
Soil and seeds. And if the soil's there and it's in great condition, a pack mm-hmm. of seeds for 20 plants costs less than $5, if mm-hmm. not like less than even a dollar, depending on yeah. the variety and the company that you go through. So when I hear this whole argument about funding for community gardens or funding to keep it open, I don't understand it, because it's so low cost. Now, yes, you have to understand how to constantly maintain the plants.
Yeah.
But I don't know, throw seeds in the ground, see if it happens. And if it doesn't, mm-hmm. it doesn't. But it doesn't really cost much to garden.
Truly. I agree. And there's lots of, like, I just think there's, the resources are infinite and easy. Companies in general, most of the time, companies will donate equipment to you, especially big seed companies, especially even small seed companies, local ones, heirloom seed companies. Like, they'll donate seeds and equipment to you because they believe in that and that's what they want to support. Truly, yeah. People, especially, you know, the way the internet works these days, it is so easy to get help from people who want to help. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the Berks Victory Gardens kind of shows that a little bit, because they're getting a lot of that help and they're doing a lot, or inspiring others to do that, to give more as well. So it shows that it is possible, but it's just taking, one, allowing the people who care to come in that space and care and do what they need to do, and working with them and supporting them to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you the same way. You know, I go on Pinterest a lot and I look at community garden ideas on Pinterest, and all that I see is like wood and crayons and some markers, some labels, some cut up some water bottles, recycled water bottles. Like, it's very low cost things, lots of really cool, cute crafts. And I'm like, it's easily doable. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even taking that a step further, I almost even thought, and kind of seeing the successes of the South of Penn initiative and organization, and I don't know, because I know there's a couple gardens, the community gardens that we're talking about exist in the area that the South of Penn organization services. So there's another organization that something like Berks Nature could even team up with. Mm-hmm. Or could it be something that they hand over those gardens
exactly. to
organizations like that? Because that is an organization that is run and sits and thrives and lives within the community itself.
Yes, and I agree with that. And I think that's when it comes down to, like, you know, again, funding and politics. Will an organization hand over lands that they're potentially sitting on that are probably bringing them funding? I mean, this is just speculation. I'm not saying this, like, I have no cited sources or anything or accusations, but, you know, could they do that. They could probably choose to do that. Will they? Probably not. And then that becomes a bigger, deeper issue, and it circulates back into what's the problem, you know? Mm-hmm. But then again, like, the only people that suffer from that are the people that live here. And most of the people that work at those big organizations, again, they don't live here. So they can say they care so much, but do they? You know, that's a matter of opinion. That's more of a question, you know, for them to answer.
Mm-hmm. So with all that being said, and talking about the Victory Garden Task Force too, is if you could talk with city officials or heads of nonprofits like Berks Nature, what kind of initiatives would you hope, in addition to all of this, to help reduce food deserts in the city? Because they exist in every urban area, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. I think my big focus, again, it would be the resurgence of the community garden. And something that fascinates me a little bit too is that a lot of the times we say, you know, we have these food deserts. And something that interests me a lot is that here we have a bodega, probably on every block. There's at least a little corner store on every block, every other block. So there's access points, but there's no fresh produce or partnerships happening to funnel, you know, quality food to those access points. They could be utilized as access points. Mm-hmm. You know, my fiance and I, we always joke about, you know, starting an organic bodega, like getting a small, like, you know, that's, you know, it's a joke, but then it's kind of not a joke. But, you know, imagine if all these small corner stores that are owned by the people that live here, by the people that see everything that happens here, had the quality produce and they were their access points for people who will actually go there, you know. And another thing that fascinates me too is like cultural markets. You know, we have the Asian market that's right over here. Then we have a lot of the Hispanic Latino markets over here. And, you know, I wonder sometimes, are they included in factoring in access to food and quality produce? Or are people only thinking of places like Whole Foods and Giant and farmers markets and stuff like that? Because those stores are here and they're popular and people are going to them. But, you know, again, is that quality produce there? And so I think one really cool thing is, like, if we had those community gardens that were, if there was a resurgence of those, you know, we're bringing in more of that initiative from people to learn about what quality produce is, how it's around them and in their community. And, you know, they could even partner with bodegas, or they can even learn more about farmers markets and our local markets, you know, the West Reading farmers market and things like that. And, you know, that's something in and of itself that, like, I could go really deep into, of like the fact that we have a pretty great farmers market. Like, I like the West Reading farmers market and we patronize it and stuff. But again, the people that live in Reading, a lot of them don't feel like they don't belong in that area. So they don't go to that area. So they don't get access to that. So that's another topic in and of itself. But mm-hmm. I would just love to see, you know, the actual people that live here, the populations that are neglected here, be more included in the cycle of, you know, the produce, the community gardens, access points and things like that. And I think that would be really cool. Is it a dream that's far away? I don't necessarily know. I think if someone really, really wanted to, that's something that they could talk to various, you know, bodega owners about increasing their options and things like that. But I just think it would be really, really cool because, like I said, they're everywhere. They're here. The potential is there. It's just opening that conversation and providing those resources and education too. So that's my little take on it.
Mm-hmm. I will say the idea of an organic bodega, I would totally just drive out of my way just to patronize your business, because it sounds like such a cool concept about having like an organically or sustainably minded bodega. Like, I could just see mm-hmm. how that could revolutionize the neighborhood in which you live in. Mm-hmm. But I kind of want to pick your brain about this, because you were talking about programs and investing in the community to also having a farmers market in the city, but it's not the same as the West Reading one. Like, that's probably the best one, I think, in Berks County. But if we were to defund the police here in the city of Reading, what would you like to see for programs to be funded around these specific topics or issues?
That's pretty neat. I would definitely think that I would do a nutrition program. Definitely, like, nutrition and how food and diet, like, I would love to fuel those programs, because unfortunately, like, something I've noticed, and this is just from having a lot of friends who live in Reading and their parents and their families, you know, the levels of health are not good. And that comes from a little bit of, you know, cultural things and cultural foods and ways and things like that. and just general miseducation, and then not having access, again, kind of what we already talked about, not having the access to those quality foods in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think that would be really cool if we had more of that, more education on diet, nutrition, and wholesomeness and whole foodness. And then again, like a farmer's market, a more robust farmer's market, and including more just diversity in the farmer's markets. And I think that would be really, really cool. I think that would be cool. That's what I would probably put the money towards.
Mm-hmm. I would say all of that and then some, because I was even thinking of how do we make green space or even vegetation more accessible to the city's residents. And there's study after study that shows that the more vegetation you have in an urban setting, the lower the risks of anxiety and depression and other mental health issues. And then because there's maybe not a domestic dispute or other problems that could have started because of mental health issues, then you're less likely to call on the police, or the police are less likely to be called on an incident. So it just makes me think that can't we spend more money and funding on green space and allowing people to have more access, still in an urban setting, to vegetation and green space than looking at funding the current situation we're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, and like you said, like fueling that cycle of anxiety and of hysteria and all of that too. And you know, it's funny because something that we've talked about, like in our circle of friends, is like the city being beautiful, like making the city more beautiful and having trees. Because, you know, my personal opinion is some of the areas of Reading, and probably more if we invested in it, are quite beautiful, and the architecture is quite interesting and beautiful, you know. And I'm not just talking like just Center Ave. People think, oh, just like that little area. Like, no, like you, if you really went out and looked, you would see some really beautiful architecture and areas that just need a little more loving, a little more trees, a little more big outdoor pots, and like you said, vegetation and herbs growing on the side, you know. Food growing on the streets is like a whole nother topic. Like, I've looked into that a lot, like especially coming from California, where there was a lot of food growing on the streets in California, and that doesn't happen here. But wouldn't that be amazing, like if we had more food growing on the streets here? Especially like, you know, growing up, there was always orange trees and avocado trees around, and here you know, you're lucky if you see evergreen shrubs, like things like that. So I definitely think that I agree with that. And, you know, and just providing more relaxing spaces for people, especially because those spaces invite people to meet the people in their communities. And, you know, when people feel more connected and more trusting of their members of their community, like you said, it reduces that, those incidents and those anxieties and the need to call upon law enforcement or other intermediaries and things like that.
Yeah, I really resonate with the idea, too, of growing edible plants in public spaces. And what was it? And I said this in another episode coming up with another guest, that I think I saw on Facebook that it was one of the demonstrators of a Black Lives Matter protest that happened. This is a couple weeks ago, if not maybe a month ago, that they were taking out the ornamental plants in these huge, gigantic beds in front of this state capitol building. And they were shoving tomatoes to different kinds of herbs to different kinds of vegetables in this, like I said, this huge bed right in front of this capitol building. And there's something so symbolic about seeing this edible vegetation growing on the steps of the state capitol building. And I just think to some extent, can't people just do that on their own? But then also at the same time, I feel like there needs to be some accountability for the city council in the sense of saying, like, can't we write new ordinances? Can't we write new policies that actually encourage that kind of stuff? And not on the exact same level or situation. I ended up researching or coming across this when we started going into the yellow phase here in Berks County, that the city of Reading apparently has this ordinance that restaurants can't put tables and chairs out like on the public sidewalk in front of their businesses. And it's like, even something as simple as that is like, how encouraging people to eat outside, to encouraging them to socialize and congregate, even around food, but in a different way, it just makes you think like that's outdated, it's mundane, it's ridiculous. And I don't know, I'd love to see a combination of people just like going up to the beds in front of the city hall and just like
fruit in there.
Yeah, like planting tomato plants in. But I also want to see the city council and the mayor kind of, I don't know, encourage policy that people wouldn't be punished if they were to do that.
Yeah, and that's something that fascinates me. Like when I lived at a different residence last year, you know, every person, it was, they're all, they were row homes, but every person I would say had at least 2x4 space of garden or land of dirt of something. And, you know, all that space was filled with overgrown weeds or overgrown hostas that seem to be really popular. Or like something that doesn't really do anything, but just add maybe like a little beauty. And don't get me wrong, beauty is valuable, but I always thought, like, imagine if, like, all of these row homes, each home planted one type of crop, right? Or just one of each, or this home had herbs, and this home did the tomatoes. Like, it just fascinates me that that is just something that's not a practice in our society, to just grow food outside wherever, and to freely eat it, because, you know, that goes back to, obviously, capitalism, consumerism, you know, they don't want you to grow your food. They want you to buy your food and keep the economy going. They don't want you sharing resources with your neighbors. They want us to all, you know, again, go to the stores and get that. And again, keep funneling money back into the economy and keep that cycle going. And then when you start doing things like gardening and sharing and encouraging public use of food, and then now you're breaking the cycle, you're disrupting the economy. Well, nobody wants that. They only want gardening and urban gardening to be nice and look good on paper, but and to make it look like they care about the city or look like we care about the people. But when you really start getting into that stuff and you really see the deep down of it, you know, it starts to uncover a lot of ugly things about our both local and larger society that a lot of times we don't talk about or people don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's sad because, you know, the average person, they're not thinking that way. Most people are completely innocent in that aspect of, they just don't know that.
Yeah, it almost makes me think back to another experience of a conversation I had with a friend that she told me a couple months ago. I think we went out to lunch or something at Wild Sage, and for those that don't know, it's kind of, I don't know, a classy kind of hipster cafe here in the city, I guess, to put it simply. But so she had like a mango smoothie, and I remember her telling me this story of going back to Columbia and visiting her family and the neighborhood where she grew up. And she said there's mango trees that line the road, and she said the last time she was home, she just would pick these hugely ripe mangoes off the tree, and she says it's the sweetest and juiciest thing. And she's like, where are the fruit trees here? Can't we grow like apples in the city? Or can't there be apple trees all around the neighborhood? But she just like distinctly remembers, like we're talking about here, that you can just pick fruit that's publicly growing in an urban setting. And another thing she added, those mangoes were completely non-comparable to the stuff that they sell in the grocery store here. Yeah, she says it's like they're not even ripe, not even close to being ripe, and they just don't taste the same. So I don't know if anybody from the city is listening to this episode. You got a lot to think about. But do you have any additional thoughts before we start to wrap up and I have some fun random questions to ask?
Not really. I feel like we had a pretty good conversation.
I guess my only other thing I would ask, and I kind of asked this earlier, but to kind of summarize what we talked about, do you have any advice for listeners when starting to garden in the community, or words of encouragement?
So I think what I would say, and since I moved to Reading about 3 years ago, is definitely to meet people who are doing what you're already doing, or to meet people who are doing what you want to be doing. So if you're a person that wants to get into gardening, go out and find those people who either they want to get into gardening or they're already into gardening. And I know it sounds really simple, but you know, for some people that might be difficult. And it doesn't have to be like people who just moved here, but I'm just saying like in general, because I think we underestimate how important it is to find other people, because we live in such a self-starter society that, you know, it can be a little isolating. Like you have to figure out how to garden. At least that's how, I don't know, I felt that way. I felt like I had to learn it all by myself and I had to figure it all out by myself. And then I felt lonely and I wanted people who liked what I liked, who liked hiking and gardening and going into nature. And when I finally started meeting those people, I feel like that took me to new levels of learning and enjoyment and friendships too. So I would definitely say like utilize social media, utilize any public forums. You know, I met people that were into gardening in community meetings and places that had nothing to do with gardening or nature. and a lot of time it was through a mutual. So that would be my first tip, is to find people who are doing what you want to be doing. And then my second tip would be, you know, use what's available to you. You know, use things like the Berks Victory Garden Initiative. If you say Berks Nature was doing something like they were giving away kits or something, or they were offering free classes for something, utilize those resources and do as much as you can. Even if sometimes maybe you may not feel like you're supposed to be in those spaces, or that those spaces are beyond your reach, you know, I would definitely encourage people to push themselves to get into those spaces and meet those people and use those resources. And then my final tip would be use YouTube. If all else fails, go on YouTube. It's free. There's a wealth of knowledge in people who can talk to you about gardening, sustainability. You can learn how to fix a car, for goodness sakes. You can decorate your house, anything. Use YouTube. It's completely free. And then grow from there and use, you know, more books and websites and narrow it down to people that way. So those would be my tips.
Yeah. I wouldn't have anything extra to add, but I will say this, that, since Berks Nature came up in our conversation quite often, is that I will say I found out through someone else that they're trying to figure out how to diversify themselves and trying to figure out how to not just diversify their employees, but I guess the services they provide. So I know it's easier said than done. And speaking from a white girl's perspective, it's a little more difficult, but it's like, in some ways, it's like, we just got to push our way into the situation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we just, if it doesn't, if people are like, meh, it's like, no, sometimes it's like, we just got to push our way in.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why, funny enough, like you said, they did come up quite a bit. You know, I spoke about this publicly on Twitter a long time ago and Facebook, you know, about my experience with that organization, that, which is really weird because it could be taken as, you know, bitterness. But, you know, like I said, I went out for a position for them. And, you know, during my interview with them, I called them out and said that, you know, you say you're here for the community, but I don't see anybody that looks like me here. Like, whether I see them in the programs, not even employee-wise, but I mean, like, coming to their programs and things like that. And, you know, they responded well and professionally, and the women there, you know, they said, like, they understand and they see that themselves too. So I, since then, have not really done too much with them other than try to contact them about the community gardens. Mm-hmm. But I completely agree with the sentiment of whether it's Berks Nature or any kind of space, like, not just to single them out and say, oh, they're doing bad, but just any space where we feel that way. Like I said, from a Black / Latina perspective, I agree with that. Sometimes you just have to push yourself in the door and make that space. And then if you can't get in the door, then you got to create a whole nother room. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of where we're at with that. And mm-hmm. I'm hoping that that continues to be something that is successful on our part, that more people feel like they belong and that they can do, that they can do it, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally resonate with that so much. Okay, so my first kind of fun random question to start to wrap up here is, what is your personal definition of sustainability?
I think sometimes we tend to overthink that. In my eyes, I think sustainability is just simply being mindful about what you're taking from, whether it's the land, just what you're taking, and how that impacts your environment long term. And then also, I think sustainability is giving back way more than what you've taken. You know, from a gardening perspective, I think of composting immediately. I think of using your choice of materials, you know, not using plastic as much as you can. Using higher quality items, not cheap throwaway items. And that's what I'm thinking of when I think about sustainability.
Mm-hmm. So if you could sum that up into one word, what would it be?
Can I pick two words?
Sure.
I would say giving back. I would definitely just say giving back, because I think that we take so much from the land and we're not always pouring into it. I mean, we quite literally drill deep, deep into the land and take from it every little bit that we can, and we don't give back. So mm-hmm. I would say giving back. Mm-hmm.
So do you have a favorite vegan dish, and what is it?
As someone who was vegan for almost like 4 or 5 years, not vegan anymore, but that's for health reasons and other stuff, but that's another topic. I would definitely say probably tacos, just vegan tacos. Mm. We usually did like black beans as a filling. And I think just because it's such a simple thing, like anyone can make it, it's just black beans and seasoning and usual taco toppings just veganized. That or like the famous cauliflower wings, because I really like making cauliflower wings.
I don't think I've ever had cauliflower wings. I've heard about them. I just have yet to have them. But are they like the spicy ones, like the buffalo wings?
Yeah, they're good.
I see. I can't eat those kinds of sauces because they're like,
they're
too spicy and acidic for my stomach. Yeah. So like, oh, maybe one day.
Fried cauliflower is good though. Just in general.
Yeah. I've had cauliflower pizza before, but they still put cheese on it though. Like,
Yeah, I know like Mod Pizza has a cauliflower crust and it's actually really good. Like, I like their cauliflower crust.
Is that the one that you're talking about? Is that the one that's out on the Fifth Street Highway?
Yep. They just opened maybe, a few months ago. Before all this happened, they had just opened.
Yeah, because I remember reading in the newspaper about Chick-fil-A that's, like, right next to them and how people are, like, sleeping in their cars or sleeping in tents in, like, the middle of January. It's, like, I'll just for a free sandwich.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I don't support Chick-fil-A in any way, but still, I just... I wouldn't, even if I did support, even if I did support Chick-fil-A, I would not do that. I'm not that desperate. So, do you have a favorite sustainable brand? And if you don't, what would be a sustainable brand you would love to see in our community here in Reading?
I think right now I'm really into this brand called Calico and Twine because I've been watching her videos on YouTube. Her YouTube is called Girl in Calico, and she promotes slow, intentional living and peaceful living and buying objects that are like long-term use, quality use, and I just really like her. Like, her videos on YouTube are really relaxing. They're very slow, intentional things. So I like that brand. Another sustainability brand I like, probably, I'm really into like these a lot of Black gardening movements right now. So like, I know there's Seed Mail Co. She's a seed shop. She's a Black-owned seed shop. And Cocoa and Seed is another going like gardening and seed shop one. They're two really neat ones. And I specifically like them because both of those brands have created online communities that are super beneficial. Like, there's a Black Girl Gardening group and it's like a really big and beneficial. And I think that's really awesome that they both took their brands to another level, that they created that community. And that, I think that's like one of the biggest things. Like, it's the only reason I go on Facebook. Like, I don't even go on Facebook other than to look in my gardening and hiking groups, to be honest. So those are two really good brands. And then, like, if I had one for Reading, again, I think it would just be like those organic bodegas. Like, I would love to just see a bunch of those organic bodegas. I think that'd be really cool. And if they were zero waste organic bodegas, oh my god. I can see it now. I can see the rice dispensers on the wall. Like,
Oh, that would just be perfect. Yes.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, I'm buying like all these different types of like specialty rice that are like in bulk. Oh, you're speaking my language.
Yeah, like that would just be really cool.
Yeah. I guess for me, and this is something like I haven't like, I guess, openly talked about, just because it's like been an idea I've been thinking about, is I know a lot of creatives out there that want to start their own sustainable beauty business, and a friend of mine who lives right outside of the city that has her own business, but she's kind of eventually hoping, I guess, to produce all her products in the city and have her space housed there. And how cool would it be if we had this like urban sustainable space where it was like kind of like a co-working space Like you had all these different small businesses that were in the same building together, and I could be one of those old repurposed factory buildings or outlet buildings that used to house industry that doesn't exist anymore. And I just like, I sometimes I like fall asleep at night thinking about it, but I don't know. Hey, if there's any local influencers listening to this episode,
yeah,
hit us both up with these ideas.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, because I like even thought, what if we could grow fresh produce in some of those old buildings? In the time of year when we can't grow things outside, and I mean, that could be a direct line to support your bodega.
Yeah. I can see that. And there's plenty of old buildings, trust me.
Yeah.
Plenty of those.
There is plenty of them. And I don't know. It's turning something that kind of looks old and decrepit into something beautiful, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last question is, if you could have a dream job in sustainability, in addition to all the things you do now, what would it be?
I definitely think that I would love, you know, we live in this like, do it yourself, have your own, build your own society. But I would actually really love to help other brands grow their sustainability brands. Like I really enjoy first of all, I really love talking about other people's success. Like I really do. I like talking about that. And I like helping other people put their ideas out and grow their brands. So I think I would be like a sustainability marketing communications specialist type person. Like I would really love to do that. And maybe one day I will. That's in the works. So that would definitely be my dream job, is to just help other people put their good ideas out there and get others interested in what they're doing as well.
Yeah, I think I could, at least from hearing from what you're saying, that I could almost even see like a collaborative type of setting or organization that could create, or it could create a collaborative environment.
Oh yeah,
for sure, with a lot of local movers and shakers. So yeah. Well, thanks, Tiana. This has been a great conversation, and I'm interested to see the feedback we could get from this episode. But as always, it's a pleasure, and thank you for listening to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. You can now listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and many other platforms. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave a review or comment. To follow us on Facebook or Instagram, go to sustainingwithshayna.com. Also, what you read and listen to here on the platform was carefully created and curated content made just for you, the listeners. Any generous donations can help to keep me supplying you with great content. Just go to Sustaining with Shayna's website. Click on the donate page to donate. Glad you're here. Thanks a million for listening.